College baseball fans, it's time for the D1 Baseball Podcast with Mike Rooney, Aaron Fitt, and Kendall Rogers. Let's win every podcast. Now, here's the pride of the Newtown Edgemont Little League, Coach Rooney.
Hello and welcome to the 47 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1Baseball.com podcast. I'm your host, Michael Patrick Rooney III. As Boog Shiambi just said, I am, in fact, the pride of the Newtown Edgemont Little League. I'm joined by the great Aaron A. Fitt. That A is for awesome. Fitzy, how are you?
I like when you said the Aaron. I like that. Can we remember that?
How do you get Zebediah out of the A, though?
The way on my planet, Kendall, middle names rotate. We rotate them around.
I didn't know if that went back to his like Yiddish heritage or something.
is there such a thing, Fitzy?
No idea.
Not that I know of.
Me either. Kendall, how are you? How's Martha? The transfer portal is got to be interesting for Martha.
Well, Martha is considering applying for one of the open Texas jobs since their volunteer and their two assistant positions are open. So stay tuned.
David, yeah, Coach Pierce is flying solo right
now. Oh, look here. Hold on, guys. We got a special guest here.
Look out.
Oh,
Clem in the house.
Clem.
I had to make sure Clem was in condition to join our live stream.
Newly, of course.
Newly
There's
minted.
A reason why it's me and not Laugh or Bianco.
Clem, parade tomorrow. What do we do? What do we do to get ready for a parade? Is there any type of visualization or positive self-talk? What happens pre-parade?
Well, if anybody knows Mike Bianco, we had a meeting about it today.
no taking shirts off?
No. We'll see. Maybe Laugh. We have wives in the box at Swayze. We're expecting 12,000, I heard. So like a Friday night SEC. I think the coaches are – maybe I'm not supposed to give this stuff away. Coaches on a fire truck, players on a double-decker bus. It's gonna be a good time.
Listen, wow. Listen. I want you and Laugh to go shirts off like was it Harry Higgs and Joel Damon at the Phoenix Open this year, waving around. Let's go.
Oh please.
Saw it and then heard Harry Higgs on Scott Van Pelt's podcast. New favorite golfer.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Oh, so
yeah,
good.
Hilarious.
Who's going to be our Tom Brady getting off the boat tomorrow?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
No comment?
DeLucia probably, but you didn't say it. I don't know how many people we have on this, so strike that from the record.
It's not too many yet.
Clem, I have a serious question for you. So I can't even imagine what this experience is like. Was there a thought that surprised you as you look back on like when it actually happened or the moments after you guys clinched it? Was there, I mean, that bear hug with Coach B is amazing. But yeah, any thought that raced through your mind that surprised you?
I don't think so, but I guess on the personal level, it was remembering the days of coaching at UTSA, who's really good now. But we were good then too in the Southland. And I remember raking the field, like that being part of my responsibility, field work, and thinking, man, I'd love to just get to a place where I can coach and have a chance to be in Omaha every single year. Like when can I get to that spot? And then here we are. So pinch yourself. Cause I was not the good player, played Division II baseball. So like on a personal level, all that stuff kind of races through very quickly. But then the other side of it, and I don't even know if this will make sense to like listeners or you guys, our players, just really, really happy for our players, because obviously everyone knows our story. Like people are non-Ole Miss fans that are listening to this are ready to puke over the 7-14 and all of that. But baseball in a weird way was never the most important thing to our players. And it was like, hey, they love to come to the field. They love to hang out. They love to fellowship. All of that. And so to be rewarded for just continuing to come to the field and continuing to pound the stone, like that part was really cool, because it's a bunch of guys, which I'm sure it's well documented by you guys, but that have knocked at the door for a long time. That's our program, right? Like even before I was here, man, just get to the doorstep and for whatever reason, not knock that door down. And then we did. And those guys, the weird part, and I think I've told you guys this, you know, off the record, we played must-win games for like a month before the postseason. And so I think that allowed our guys, Runes, I think I told you this on the street the other day, it's allowed our guys to, in the actual postseason, just play with complete freedom. And so just proud for our guys, because as the country got to see, like, Elko's a pretty cool dude. But aside from him, who gets all the credit, like Bench and Graham, a bunch of really good dudes. So fun guys to root for sure.
Can I just say, speaking of on the street conversations, we had a great conversation in the middle of the crosswalk the other day after you guys won it all. And I'm just glad we're all here to talk right now instead of getting rammed over by a pickup truck or something. Because when we hung out there, when we waited for that thing to tick all the way down from 20 seconds to the buzzer, and then we called it.
At least Clem would have gone out happy.
That's right.
100%. There was some talk, like, during some turbulence yesterday on the flight home. I heard a guy say, like, well, listen, if we go down now, is there a better time to go down? And we're all going down together. So, like, Calvin Harris, our right fielder, is not a fan of flying. So he wasn't a huge fan of the comment, but whoever made it, like, it's true. I mean, really.
Oh, that's so good. That is Kendall, crazy. I got more questions for Clem. Can I fire a couple more at him?
Dude, go for it. Let's go.
So, Clem, after you guys clinched against Arkansas, okay, let me ask my – I want to ask my second question first. I got questions over here. So, Jacob Gonzalez was the hottest of messes in Omaha, and the game one of against Oklahoma was like – I feel like if I had thrown a white hoagie at him, he would have swung at it. Like, it was like first pitch, if it's in the stadium, it was just like desperation, fear, emergency hacks. And then that fourth, that I think it was his fourth at bat in that game, was like an incredible walk in a key moment. And then he hit the missile off of the pitcher, you know, off of the glove. How does that happen? Like, how do you go from just absolute, like, desperation mode? And then obviously he was brilliant in the second game too.
Well, the short answer is he's a big leaguer. And so that's how you go from not being good to being really good. It's something none of the four of us could do. Like, he's going to play for a really long time. The flip side of that is it's really strange. Had you told me 2 weeks ago, like, hey, listen, the one guy in your lineup that is just going to swing at anything thrown, like out of hand swing, is Jacob Gonzalez, I would have laughed in your face. I would have believed any of the other eight guys. This is a guy who walked 50 times and struck out like 25 times on the year. And he's the most composed guy. I know you guys have talked to him, and it's the worst. Like, I'm sure if he was ever post game to the podium, I'm sure you guys were like, oh no. Like, it's one word answer. Very, very quiet. The rest of our guys will give a good quote. He's just not. So
somebody needs to tell our man Jacob, you can get excited a little bit, you know?
No, like, there was a clip of him after we won it where they have like 25 cameras, but one of them was on him. And the emotion he showed, it would have been like any of the four of us doing backflips, like from center field to home plate. And so really cool. But he pressed for whatever reason, in the series. And he was the one guy in our lineup who didn't have a great series. And then, of course, you know, yesterday, 2 days ago in the clincher, he gets three knocks off of another big leaguer, Cade Horton, and is really, really good, which he's been all year. He's a stud.
Love it. All right, my last question, Clem. We'll let you go. We know Cooper probably has some parade prep, but are we wearing Spider-Man to the parade tomorrow? Or what are we going with for young Cooper?
Cooper currently, the reason I'm outside on the back porch is Cooper is in tidy whities. It's my 3-year-old kid, and mom wasn't a huge fan of Coop being on the D1 podcast or whatever we're on right now with tidy whities. He would love to be out here. He would steal the show. So. I don't know what he's got. I don't know what he's wearing. He's going to be mad if he's not on that fire truck. I can promise you that.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. So here's my last one. Mike B, when we talked to him in the press conference after you guys clinched against Arkansas to go to the finals, and this hadn't dawned on me, he talked about like your guys' game three super regionals in past years actually being an advantage for this team. And I wouldn't have thought of that in a million years. Any thoughts that you have regarding that?
Yeah. Probably an advantage. Yeah. Just we never won any of them. That's what stinks. And really, and they were blowouts. Like, we just were probably a pitcher short. We got smoked in 19, made it to game three. And let's be honest, the reason we made it to game three in both of those is Doug Nikhazy, right? Like, mm-hmm. He threw game two in both of those. That guy never lost a postseason game. And the weird part, like, there is a little bit of like, as a coach, like a little hole in your gut, like that guy deserves to be on this team. Like that guy deserves to be at that parade. And like when you text those guys, they don't really get it, but like, there's no shot we win the national title without Nick Casey being who he is. I think you guys probably get that because you're around it every single year. But anyway, I do think it plays into our advantage. And I think the biggest thing, Runes, before the game threes is just we dug ourselves such a big hole that we played must-win games for 6 weeks. I know I said it earlier, but – and then, like, you watched our guys play the last 2 weeks. It was just, you know, if I could bottle it up and sprinkle it on next year's team and the following year's team – We would do it all the time, but we dug ourselves such a big hole that somehow when we came out of it, we played really loose, and it was awesome. Now, some of that is veteran guys and having been in super regionals their entire career, like the Elkos and Grahams and Benches, they've won more games at Ole Miss than anyone ever, more than Lynn and Pomerantz and all those guys.
I was looking back the other day on like our some of our chats, like our Monday chats we do over the course of the season. And I felt like for like 6 weeks in a row, I feel like I was being a therapist for the Ole Miss fan base. Like, hey guys, like, no, listen, these guys are going to make a run. They're too talented not to. It's going to happen. And then you could see it week by week. Like, man, like my answers were like, I don't understand why they're not better. I really don't get it. Like, I still think they can make a run, but I, you know, it's time's ticking. And then the next week it's like, guys, maybe this just isn't their year. Like, did you have a moment, like, be honest with us now, it's over.
Yeah.
Did you have a moment where you're like, man, maybe this just isn't going to happen for us?
Yeah. I'll be candid with you guys. So we started to play better in Fayetteville. Like, we lost that series, left the bases loaded with Elko at the plate, Tigered on the mound in game three. And Elko flew out to center field, right? It happens. It's baseball. And Laff had been recruiting in the Midwest that week. So he had his car up there. So I hopped in his car and drove back to Oxford from Fayetteville. That's like a, I don't know, 6-7 hour drive. And on that car ride home, Laff would probably kill me. Like, we're not supposed to say any of this, but it's the truth. We were like, we've dug ourselves too big of a hole. Like, I cannot believe this. Because the one thing Mike Bianco is, as you guys know, is consistent, right? Like, we're going to make the postseason every single year. The worst year he's ever had is 13 SEC wins. Like, that's the worst. And then I think he's had a couple 14 and 16 wins years, which is this year. And then other than that, it's 15 and 15 or better. Like, we host all the time. You know, all those things that you guys know. That was the low point, and it was the low point for our team. So, real quick story. After the game, it's Derek Diamond's start. And we get done. And one of the things that's staple of our program is when we meet in the outfield after a game, you have to take your sunglasses off and make eye contact. And so it's a day game. It's a 1 o'clock game. We're in Fayetteville. We just got beat in a heartbreaker, and we're 7-14. And Elko and Derek Diamond both have their sunglasses on. Those are not guys that would leave their sunglasses on, veteran guys in our program. And so Mike is talking, and I walk around to tell him to take their sunglasses off, and I can see Diamond's lip quivering, and I can see a tear going down Elko's face. Like, at that point, I was like, well, I'm not going to ask them to take their sunglasses off. Like, they were devastated. Like, we've dug ourselves too big of a hole. They knew. And I remember telling Laff that, like, man, we got to do it, whatever we can to keep our guys' head above water here. I don't know if we can climb out of the hole, but this is what happened. And then, you know, credit to Elko, man. Like, I know he's the guy in the picture and he's the story and all of that, but he deserves it. Like, he held the thing together. He's Mr. Positive. Somehow he predicted, like, hey, if we get in, we're going to win the national title, which is just a dumb prediction. Like, who wins the national title? Like, who does that, Tim? And here we are. The four of us talking, and pretty cool story. It's pretty fun.
Clem, what did you see from, like, Hunter Elliott? So cool. Like, what did you see from, like, Hunter? What did you see from, like, Hunter Elliott down the stretch, Clem? Because, I mean, he was a guy that I thought was pretty good for much of the season, but, like, in the postseason, like, he was on another wavelength.
Well, I work with the hitters, and so Bianco and Laff, I don't know why he wasn't in the starting rotation the entire year. That's what I saw. Him and DeLucia.
See, this is the content we're here for.
That's right.
No, Elliot, here's the thing. Like, the one thing about our two guys, DeLucia and Elliot, you get on that stage in Omaha with 30,000 people, and I think really good pitchers, and we face some of them, and I'm not going to call them by name, but, like, really good pitchers, it takes them a couple innings to, like, get their feet underneath them because it's a different environment. There's three decks. You're breathing hard and all of that. call those two guys dumb, call them super competitive, call them whatever you want. They may have gotten hit around, which they didn't, but they were going to go right after it. And that's why I wish Nick Casey could have pitched on that stage. Like, he's the same way, right? Like, those guys, for whatever reason, it's not us. It's like their parents or some coach way back, like zero fear. And so Elliott has whatever that is. He's got that. And like, we faced some really, really good arms up there that settled in, but we scored two in the first and it's over at that point, right? Because that ballpark plays big, except for on the weekend, but that ballpark plays big and you give up two runs and that's a lot of runs. And so those two guys were not scared and they just went right after it and came at you. And that's the best thing about both of them.
Hey, Clem, I got the selection show. So Mike Farron and I interviewed Peyton Chatagnier before the series, and he told an awesome story. By the way, like, we're all going to be working for Peyton Chatagnier someday. Like, holy heck. CEO written all over him. So he said, this was so funny. We asked him at the selection show, and Peyton said when they saw your guys' name on the screen, everyone went so crazy that actually 5 minutes later, no one knew you guys were playing Arizona because you saw Mississippi and it was like, wow. And then, so I'm curious what you're just like, your experience at the selection show. I can't even imagine what that morning was like.
Yeah, really, really fun. We try to get as much information as we can. Like, as coaches, you can't wait around. Like, hey, who can give us some inside information and all of that stuff? We really didn't know what was going on. And, you know, we're no different than anyone else. We're reading you guys' predictions. Like, oh, come on. How is Kendall keeping us out of there? Like, he's usually the negative. Fitz usually on our side. But we felt like we had done enough. And Aaron kept, you know, when we beat A&M on Saturday, Mike got thrown out of the game. I'm the acting head coach, 1-0, right? Beat A&M on Saturday the last weekend, or the game two. I guess it was probably Friday. We felt like we were in because that got us to 14. Then we lose the finale, and then Vanderbilt, for whatever reason, doesn't throw Holton in their last weekend and saves him for us, who's like a big leaguer also. So, of course, we lose the SEC tournament play-in game. And so then you're, you know, biting your fingernails. So turns out, because we go 10-1 and go on a great stretch, the biggest headache was seeing if we were going to get into the thing. So for whatever reason, we were whatever NC State was last year, we were that. You know what? We just played really well down the stretch. It's the beautiful thing about baseball. I don't think this stuff happens in football. You know, like the 500 league team can't win the national title. You know, it's just they're outmanned. It's the beautiful thing about our sport. And for whatever reason, you know, we happen to be that team this year. And heck, we're happy to take that crown.
I love
That's
it.
Awesome.
Clem, I'm going to say this for the group. You know, obviously we're not allowed to have favorites in our position, but you know, you and Laugh and Mike B are, you know, just such great people that it's impossible not to root for you guys. And sometimes, you know, you can get cynical as the sport gets more competitive, you start to get cynical that, hey, only the operators and only the people that treat it like Wall Street can survive. And I mean, I this may sound dramatic, but I think you guys winning this title, not only are we thrilled for you guys because we think so highly of you, but I think it was good for the sport. I think it was a good reminder for our sport that grabbing every little edge, no matter what the cost, is not always the answer. So anyway, congratulations and enjoy the parade. And if Cooper's not wearing a Spider-Man outfit tomorrow on the fire truck, I may be disappointed.
Bad parenting, right?
That's only if he hits right-handed, then that's bad parenting.
That's right.
Hey, try to keep Laugh out of trouble tomorrow, buddy.
That's right.
I will, guys. Well, hey, listen, you guys are the best. I know everyone says it that comes on and all of that, but what you guys do for college baseball is awesome, and I know everyone says it, but they're right. You guys are the best. Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
You're the man, Clem.
All right, fellas.
Enjoy. Congrats.
Yep, thanks.
Oh, that's awesome. Look at KR making stuff happen.
How about that?
Mike, you know, Clement, everybody. One of the all-time greats.
What a gem. I mean, who would have thought the son of Brad Clement would be that good of a guy? But, hey, one thing I was going to say, I was having this discussion with somebody earlier on a Louisiana station about Ole Miss. But, you know, this is a program that we've talked. It's like beating a dead horse at this point. But we talked so many times about how they were so close, but they can kind of never get that – that big win. But you kind of wonder, like, now with Ole Miss, like, this is a program that is supremely talented that now, like, believes and now knows it going to national championship. You almost kind of feel like it could turn the tide of this program moving forward in terms of, you know, being in big games and getting to Omaha and actually kind of going the distance. You kind of feel like this is a tide turner in terms of the psyche of that whole kind of organization.
I think that's totally fair.
I mean, just look at, you know, other programs that have gotten to that mountaintop. I mean, you know, how long did it take Tim Corbin and, you know, Brian O'Connor and John Savage and all those guys, not Kevin O'Sullivan, he got there pretty quickly, but the rest of them got there, it took a while. And then once they got there, once they won it all, we got another special guest coming. I'm going to finish my thought. Once they got it all, once they knocked down the door, you know, it was a whole different deal. Hello, Kyle.
What's up, KP?
Before do I go on this?
How do
we do this? No, go horizontal. I think horizontal
was good. That was you were showing plus mastery right
there. It is.
Look
at this. What are we? The lake house? What is this?
No, we're at home. It's a sunroom. I'm making dinner tonight. Okay.
Oh, nice.
So the grill is fired up. Asparagus is going in the oven in a minute, but I had to watch Clem, and that was really cool. By the way,
so great.
Like really, really pure. I think it's one of the best things about what our sport is. There's really good people in it, man. It's fun to cover it.
Amen. KP, I want to say your guys' call, Mike, you know, you, Berkey, Mike Monaco, that was awesome. And Monaco, you know, Monaco's a Notre Dame guy, so I'm biased towards him. But he's also a beautiful human, and he's also a rock star announcer. And it would have been great to have Ravi. I mean, having Ravi in Omaha every year, he's such an icon in our sport.
Yeah.
That has impact on our sport. And but that said, I thought Mons, they had a cool video of you guys when Mons made that final call. And I thought you guys crushed it. That was so cool the way that ended.
You know, the longer that we do this, I think the more that you realize when you got to shut up and just let what's going on in the field and the story itself tell itself. I remember the first game I ever did was 20 years ago. It was a super regional on pay-per-view between Long Beach State and Stanford. And I had accepted a job to trade bonds on the bond floor of a company. And I didn't even really know what that meant. But that's what I was going to do. And ESPN gave me a chance to go out and do two games, but I had never done games. And I talked incessantly for two straight games. And Jared Weaver was actually with Long Beach State there in that super. And I went back and watched it. I'm like, this is gross. Like, who would ever want to listen to this? And the more that you do it, obviously, Runes, you've done it a ton. Like, the biggest moments – at least when it's going on, we can't add to it. The moment tells itself, and if we try to add to it, I think ultimately we screw it up. And I guess I've screwed it up enough, so now I've learned to shut up and let the whole thing go. And I pulled my phone out. I mean, for that at bat, I videoed the whole thing.
That's awesome.
Because I knew I wasn't going to talk. So it made it a lot easier. Like, I could just let Monaco go. And at that point, when everything's done, then I'll turn the phone off and go to it. But I appreciate you saying it. It's amazing what silence will do sometimes.
Love it. Who else has a question for the big man?
I mean, we
stumped you all. I love it. This is the best.
So, I mean, you know, Kyle, what's your takeaway? Let's just, you know, after watching what Ole Miss just did, I mean, did you see it coming? I kind of felt it was coming once they got into the field. I was like, you know, it kind of seemed like they had that same magic that UVA had in 2015 and Oregon State had in 2007. But like, what did you think? You saw this team a decent amount during the SEC season. I mean, did you see this coming?
I didn't know if they'd pitch enough. That was the biggest thing. You knew they'd hit enough. Like, they're old enough. Their lineup is old. I mean, enough has been said about the three guys that came back, but that component of it, I think, made it to where offensively, any environment you go into, you're going to be fine. You may not win, but you're going to be fine. Like, you're not going to be wild by what it is. But I didn't see DeLucia being that good and Elliott being that good. And ultimately their bullpen being that good. Like their bullpen in the postseason was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So that was a piece that I didn't see. So no, you had that more than I. Offensively, like name recognition, you know, some outlet ranked him first in the middle of the year, which
some clouds
that like, I don't know I didn't see it. I thought it was a really cool story to get him in. I didn't think they'd be in. Like I was floored. You were floored.
I was.
Floored. I think
I'm pointing at all three of you.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, KP. Like Clem brought up beating A&M on Saturday, but people forget that A&M kind of got after him pretty good in that series finale. And then they went to Hoover and kind of laid an egg. At that point, you're thinking like, man, there's no way they could get in. But, you know, from talking to committee members, it seemed like they kind of thought that, you know, Ole Miss was one of those teams that if they could just get in the tournament, they could get on a run. And if you look at their whole run, it's always interesting to me when you look at these teams and like the heroes that emerge, you know, Calvin Harris in the nine hole, TJ McCants, you know, with a big home run and some big hits in this World Series. And of course, you know, we were talking to Clem about Hunter Elliott. I mean, he was good the whole year, but I mean, he was like first team All-American good in Omaha.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting.
Well, and in Hattiesburg, I mean, he was the same way that when they got to the postseason, which so Corbs historically has done this. And obviously Ole Miss did this year to where he's reticent to throw the freshman in early to a weekend rotation and they kind of work them in and then see exactly what they are. I had Elliott probably second or third week of the SEC to that part of the season. And I remember some Ole Miss fans said, we don't have any pitching. I said, you get a left-hander, you got a chance to be pretty good. And how they use him, we'll figure it out. But you also don't know. I mean, I know Clem talked about it, like what he's going to be like on that stage. That stage is totally different. I mean, you can go back and look at some of the greatest arms that have ever come in there. And that stage has changed them. Or an offense on the other side in that stage has changed them. And it didn't change those guys. But the DeLucia thing is, it's really cool. We talked a lot about Kate Horton, how much money he made during the course of 3 or 4 weeks. Dylan DeLucia did too. And it's not the same amount. Like he's, you know, I don't think he's going to the first round, but he's got a chance to pitch for a while because he really understood what it took with his stuff to get big time hitters out. And if you can do it on that stage, man, you got a pretty damn good chance to do it on any stage.
Hey KP, but if you have to tend to the grill, yell at us. Let's not burn the city down. We're
lower right hand corner, I see the leave button. So if I need to, I can push that.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, so I want to share this thought with you, KP and Kendall and Fitzy. I'd be curious. This is a thought that I'm having a tough time reconciling. So, you know, it's been well documented. 6 of the 8 teams were the futuristic SEC. Yeah. So that's frightening, right? Depending on your perspective. Right. And here's the thought I had today that was even more frightening. It was 6 of the 8, not including Vandy, Florida, Tennessee, and Mississippi State. So you're like, oh, crap. Like, what are we doing here? Like, we're going to just do Hoover twice from now on. And so but then I also look at the super regional round, and I look at how, you know, like Oregon State could have easily been in Omaha. North Carolina could have easily been in Omaha. Louisville could have easily been in Omaha. You know, so what is your take on that? I'll start with you, KP. Like, does that gap feel like it's just getting out of control, or was this just a year where the SEC schools just won those super regional games?
I don't think it's getting out of control. I mean, it's definitely widening.
Oh, and LSU, by the way, Mark. Yes, I see you there. I forgot the Tigers.
Listen, I mean, I've said this and it makes people mad, but it actually does mean more in the league. And the money shows it. Look at what LSU just did with their pitching coach.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pitching coach of a division leading team in the major league in the middle of the season. Like, it does matter more. I'm sorry. And I know it ticks people off in other conferences, and I get it. But if you're going to change that, you got to catch up. Runes, I mean, you know, you're a West Coast guy. I'm a West Coast implant for a few years. It does concern me about the West Coast long term, because that hasn't happened, and it hasn't happened, I would say, on a maybe in a few spots, but they're going to have to do something, because it could widen pretty quick.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is, you know, I was just talking to a West Coast coach last night about this, because we were talking about the USC job, and the thing that we talked about was, you know, it sounds like with this transformation committee stuff that's going to happen at the end of the year, that will probably go into effect more than likely in 24. I mean, the SEC is probably going to go to 24 to 26 full scholarships in baseball. And it's going to be a conference by conference decision. And like, I'm really concerned, you know, if you're Brock Ungerich at USD, like if I'm at USD, like I'm really concerned whether or not WCC, I think we can all probably agree, like the WCC is not going to fund 24 to 26 baseball scholarships. The Pac-12, I mean, the Pac-12 and Big Ten, like, do we have a lot of confidence they're going to support 24 to 26 baseball scholarships? I'm not. And what happens if the SEC is at 24 to 26, the Big 12 and the ACC are 24 to 26, and then the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are at 18? I mean, the gap that we see now is only going to widen.
I think the Pac-12 ultimately, you know, will step up. I would hope.
I would hope.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Big Ten has all the money in the world. We all know that. Yeah, but I mean, like, why would you invest in baseball when it's a summertime sport that starts in mid-February and you're in the North?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I get it. I mean, like, you know, it's just a fact. Like, it doesn't make sense for them monetarily. So I would actually be surprised if the Big Ten can keep pace. But, you know, I mean, the bottom line is, like, the SEC, Kyle, you're right. I mean, just look at the investment that those athletic departments have made and those universities have made in their facilities, and look at the fan interest. I mean, you know, I know that it gets old, like, every time we tweet about any crowd anywhere, like every Mississippi State and Ole Miss and Arkansas and LSU fan has to chime in and say, oh, that's like a Tuesday midweek crowd at our place. You know, like, we get it. Like, you guys have the best crowds, but like, that is a big part of it. Like, people do care more about baseball in particular in those markets. And, you know, if you've got the best facilities and the best crowds and the best TV setup, why wouldn't the best players want to play in those places? It's just common sense.
Well, and I mean, in the environment we're in now, the most NIL, that matters.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, go ahead, KP.
I don't think the Pac-12 is throwing around a lot of NIL money. I haven't heard of it. If they are, fine.
The Devils are trying. They're doing something. The Devils have been pretty good on the portal the last 2 weeks.
Well, and that's good, but that shouldn't be the end all. But it does matter right now. Like, for some, not for all, but for some, the NIL component is definitely going to matter. And so you got to play both games. You got to play the facility game and the coaching staff game and pay for that, but you also have to play the NIL game. It's still, like, to a normal baseball fan that knows nothing about college baseball, if you went and told them, hey, guess what? The pitching coach at the division leading major league team left to go to LSU, it would floor them. Like, the general idea of that just doesn't happen in other sports, but I think it's pretty telling for the way that college baseball is, right? It's a good thing. I think it's a good thing. And Wes Johnson is, honestly, I've never been around a pitching mind that is smarter than that pitching mind. So selfishly, I'm actually really glad he's back in the college game.
Yeah, his track record. I would say that that's a positive of this, you guys, is that if you believe a rising tide lifts all boats – I mean, you know, I sent KP a screenshot of an article I saw on D1 Tracker today where, you know, one of the big wigs at the NCAA was being questioned on, hey, is your organization in real trouble? What are the positives that are on the horizon? Yeah. And he literally referenced the media rights for baseball, softball, and women's basketball as three of the, you know, like, pillars that they're, you know, gonna ride forward as far as things that can go well. So I do think that is, you know, it It felt like, I don't know if you guys felt the same way, you probably did, but it felt like our sport just had an awesome, awesome postseason. I mean, it just, like, yes. the average random sports fans that I've heard commenting about how much fun they had during our postseason has just floored me.
No, I totally agree. I mean, brands help a ton.
Yeah.
When you get the biggest brands, and we had really good brands, from a just general college athletic standpoint, that helps a ton. And I think the games being close at the end help too. But the ratings will show you that if you have the brands there, they watch.
Yep.
Which, you know, we get caught up in how good the game is and everything else. But the reality is, if Texas is playing LSU, it can be 15-0. And they're going to watch. So the brand component helps. I think the bigger thing is hopefully in the college game, we can keep building more college baseball brands that fit into that. And I think history has shown that in this sport, you can do that. Like, it's not college football, especially now with the portal, but you can do it fairly quickly if this is a sport you want to commit to. Virginia, Rice, North Carolina, Coastal, like these places that were not, I'm missing 10 of them, but these places that did not have a lot of college baseball history, that when they got the right coach and commitment, it happened. Hell, Florida. I mean, Pat McMahon was a hell of a head coach, but when Sully got there, Florida changed. Mm-hmm. Like, Florida got to a point that was totally different, and other places can do that.
I am a little worried, though, that if, in fact, we go to what Kendall's saying, where we've got, you know, the power conference is offering 24 scholarships, that it's just going to be college football, where you've got the same six programs competing for national title every year.
It could, but let me devil's advocate you, Fitzy, before I go to the grill here in a minute. So here's the positive of that. There's more kids playing college baseball that otherwise wouldn't have been playing college baseball.
Sure.
And so, like, the overall component of it, I'm in. You're right. It may turn to that, to where there's less programs that, if they don't commit financially, have a chance to compete. But the other is, how many of those kids would have played pro ball that now, because of that, will play college ball? And I am way biased, but I think that route, from a life standpoint, man, it's a really good route. Like, at some point, the music stops. And it may be in college, it may be in A-ball, it may be when you play five years in the big leagues. The music stops. And the college experience is a massively important experience. So yeah. If more scholarships means, all right, there's a few less that can compete, but we still get more guys going to college, I'm okay with that.
No, and I am too. And also, I think it, you know, just from a grassroots level, it strengthens baseball as a whole. If we can, you know, lure some of those multi-sport guys to choose baseball instead of basketball or football, because we also have full scholarships, you know, I mean, like, that's a total game changer. So ultimately, yes, I think it is good for the sport if that's the direction we head in. I just think that it will come, I think, at the expense of some of these stories that you were talking about, the Coastal Carolinas, the Fullertons, you know, like these kind of programs just don't have the same kind of budgetary power. I don't think we're gonna have as many of those stories going forward, and you know what, that'll be a loss for our sport. There's no question about it in my mind, but the greater good, I think, will still be served.
Well said. KP, it was a pleasure to be in your hometown last week. Thank you for hosting us all.
It was. It was
awesome.
Gentlemen, thanks for coming over. I'm going to go make some chicken. But I really enjoyed listening to you, and I'm going to listen to you while making chicken. So,
nice. Boy.
Enjoy the summer. I think we've gotten to the point that we deserve that. So
that's right. Well earned. Boys. See you, KP.
Thanks, KP.
Later, man.
Oh, that's so good. Kendall, look at you booking guests for us tonight. I mean, you, kudos.
Yeah, I promise you that's our last guest. I actually didn't mean for this to go like 35 minutes, but
oh,
it's okay.
Wait, I've got a special – no, never mind.
Fitzy's cat. Hey, let's wrap up with this, you guys. Sure. Let's – like, some final thoughts from the trip. Like, seeing KP was awesome. Like, you know, we got to go to his house before the World Series started. This is funny. So after we leave Omaha, I get one of those note. I open the note app on my phone, and I write down things to do again next year, things to not do. And I always write in my not to do's, I always write stop staying out till 2 a.m. every single night. Fitzy, I think you said it. Yeah. Like, because I'm of the mode, like it's somebody's last night in town every night. And and I'm going to honor that even at my own expense, mostly at the expense of our morning shows, which are a little blurry. But what about you guys? Kendall, you went to – no, you weren't able to go to Lo Sole Mio because it was too crowded, right?
It was. I'll tell you what my kind of, my takeaway is, you know, you look at two first-timers and Danny Wexelman and Mike Monaco. I thought both of those – both of those guys and girls were fantastic. I thought Monaco was a rock star. You know, I'll say this, Runes, you've been in the booth before. Like, having the national championship game as, like, a first-timer in Omaha, dude, that's really hard.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a phenomenal job with it. Steven Schock, you know, I always thought Steven was a big deal. Like, big donkey, he's a big deal to us, right? But, like,
that's awesome.
I was, like, mesmerized at Media Day when he's walking around there. Peyton Graham, of all people, walks me and goes, dude, you're a legend. And, like, Ivan Melendez is, like, a little nervous. He doesn't really like talking to media all that much. But he sees Schock, and all of a sudden his eyes light up, and he wants to talk. So, Steven Schock was a rock star on this trip as well.
Yeah, oh, so call. Good.
And Jake Mintz, of course, the recipient, and Jordan Schusterman also. If Jordan stayed one more day, maybe he would have won the Colin Dever Breakout Star Award. But Jake stayed one day longer. He gets the Colin Dever Breakout Star and the Press Box Award. Great to have the Cespedes Barbecue guys and Steven Schock along with us for the ride. We had a great team. We had, you know, of course, Eric Sorensen, so awesome. Mandy Sorensen shooting photos. I mean, you know, we're lucky. Heat. We're lucky to have a fantastic team, you guys, and working with you two gentlemen all season long. What a pleasure.
Yes, well said. Well said. And I think that's what that makes the Omaha trip so great is it's a magnet for all these incredible people. I think about, you know, Kelsey Riggs and Danny Graves, who I get to work with on ACC Network. And then you've got Todd Walker and David DeLucci. And, you know, Luch, as we call him, was just through the moon because of Ole Miss, his alma mater winning it all. And, you know, I think of, you know, you mentioned the Cespedes Family Barbecue guys. You know, I think about Clinton Yates being there. I think about Ryan McGee being there, the caliber writer he is. You know, just on and on. It's amazing. I will say this. I like last year I had my friends from Philly in town because of Chris Newell. This year I had the Notre Dame gang in. Me and my liver wouldn't mind a year without some group from my past coming to Omaha, but it's also
Arizona State 2023. Here we go.
That's right. Here come the Devils. Oh my gosh. That just frightened me.
Hey, we got to actually, I think it's a good question here from Connor Johnson in the chat. He says, when was the last time Omaha was this uncompetitive? There was like one high leverage situation the whole week and a half. I think we had all but three Two. Games.
Yeah.
All but three games were decided by four or more runs, guys. It was, yeah. It really was like the first 9 or 10 games were like a total snooze fest, really. I mean, like there was just no late inning drama for like the first week. All the games felt like were decided by the fifth inning. You know, it was wild. I don't have any like explanation for this. I have a
thought on that, but I would say this, Fitzy, like as I've looked back on it, I don't think it was as bad as we think it was. And here's what I mean. I thought the Notre Dame Texas game was compelling. I thought that was a good baseball game, mostly because I felt like Texas was better than Notre Dame and Notre Dame was just trying to stay a little bit ahead of them. I actually thought that was a good game. I thought both Arkansas Ole Miss games were good. And I actually thought both of the even though game one of the finals was 10-3, I mean, that wasn't a 10-3. That kind of got to 10-3 late. And, you know, of course, back-to-back-to-back home runs was incredible. And that was like the sixth inning, wasn't it? Like that was fairly late in the game.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean,
but my theory was I think like Clem kind of alluded to it. I think the combination of it was really hot early in the tournament, and the triple decker stadium, and you know, like hey, we all show up to Omaha fairly exhausted because of the postseason. I think there were a lot of teams that showed up fairly exhausted. You know, like think about Stanford. Like, think about what Stanford had to play 5 elimination games to get there. Like, that's a lot. I know they're 20-year-olds, but man, that Notre Dame after they beat Texas, they look completely spent to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, then A&M looked spent in that first game against Oklahoma. You know, which is kind of the way it was.
Yeah, but pitchers in general, they looked toast on the mound. Like pitchers looked that heat was beating them up. So
this was a rough year for pitchers in general. I mean, yeah. I looked back through all my notes today. I was working on the All Fit team coming out tomorrow, by the way.
Nice.
And so I looked back through all my notes from every game that I attended this year, looking for just guy names that I, you know, that grabbed my attention. And there just weren't a lot of pitchers that really did much for me this year. Like it was just kind of a blah year for pitchers across the board. I don't know. I mean, and you know, the stats back it up. Scoring and home runs were way up, and pitchers just seem like they're on the struggle bus.
Well, you know, you shave off the top 1% of pitchers, right? And it's like that's hard. You know, now the guys that should have been number twos or number ones, and yeah, there was all kinds of factors. So, boys, this will be fun over the next few weeks with our podcast. We got the All-American team to talk about. We can do some more general thoughts. You know, we'll have our 8 for Omaha coming out. That'll be fun to talk about. Hey, before we wrap up, let's wrap up on this. I always struggle with the 8 for Omaha. I feel like I'd be better off just throwing a dart at the top 25. Like, do you guys have a good research method? Because the draft is still a month away. Like, what do you use for a reference when you do your 8 for Omaha?
I mean, I know we talked about it, and like it is difficult because you have the draft, you have the transfer portal. So like our thinking is like, hey, let's do one now as it stands now, this Friday, but then let's come back after the draft and, you know, whatnot. And that way we know who's going where transfer portal wise, and we know who's more than likely showing up on campus. So whereas in the past, like, you know, you knew guys weren't transferring, so you kind of make pretty rather educated guesses. Now it's kind of like you know, LSU may have Paul Skeens a week from now, and that kind of changes the dynamic of that team quite a bit.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, also previous years we've done this, the draft had already happened. And so you kind of had a pretty good idea who was going to sign or not. Like it's like right now, it totally feels like just magic 8-ball scenario here. Like, well, I have no idea. Like, you know, like the transfer portal changes everything. Just look at Texas A&M. I mean, their roster last year was not very good, and they finished outside regionals, and then they went out and hit the portal hard, and then they're in Omaha. Like, somebody's going to do that again. Probably a lot of somebody's going to do that again, because that's the way it's going now. I mean, just look at what LSU just did. You know, I mean, Tommy White and Christian Little. Has there been another one that I've missed since then?
You got the Mike Rooney Collective at Arizona State.
Yeah, State's doing some nice work over there. The you know, it's funny, like the not to get on a tangent, but the alumni at Arizona State are really excited about Willie Bloomquist and what they're doing. But I kind of thought like, great. Everyone's excited. Wow. Whatever. Like what that means, nothing, right? Like that does nothing for the team. Right. But actually maybe it is doing something for the team in this NIL era where it's like, I don't know, maybe some of those former players are helping attract some of these kids. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going on there, but you're right, Kendall. They ASU's gotten after it in the portal. I like the pieces they've collected. Timmy Manning was a super high profile recruit.
Ross Dunn.
Come on. Yeah, they got that shortstop from San Francisco.
Oh yeah. That guy's a really good player.
Kieschel or Kieschel or whatever.
I think it's Kieschel. Luke Kieschel. He's got a chance to be a pretty decent pick next year. He was one of the stars of the Cape last summer.
Yeah. Tennessee got Maui Ahuna out of the portal, as if they needed to be any better.
Yeah, crazy. So, and here's some other topics that we'll talk about coming up. So we'll have 8 for Omaha's. We'll have the All-American team we can review. Transfer portal conversations will be ongoing. And one of these podcasts, boys, I'd like to – let's kind of get our arms around the coaching carousel. Like just do a – maybe we'll do a draft on coaching hires. There we go.
Let's put our arms around it.
Yes, that's right. Let's hug the coaching carousel.
We'll get Patrick Ebert on here to talk some summer ball. Patrick was actually at a prospect league game a couple of nights ago on the
hashtag first, grinder. Well,
yesterday, actually.
On the grind, so. Ebert.
And you know what else we need is we need to have an accountability podcast where we look back at our early season bets and games. And, you know, we face a reckoning. That needs to happen, too.
I'm not sure if I'm available for that podcast, but you guys knock yourselves out. I think it's going to be great.
Guys,
I'll listen.
Did Georgia make it to Omaha or not? You can hang up and I'll.
Maybe
I'll,
we can I'll have listen. A guest appearance hey, from Chris in Louisville for that.
Did
one.
You guys get an apology from Chris in Louisville? Because by my accounting, neither Georgia nor Tennessee made it to Omaha.
Ooh.
And I felt like Chris from Louisville, our favorite caller. We love all of our callers.
I feel like that's a wash, right? It's a wash.
He blasted us for having Georgia 4 spots ahead of the Vols.
One spot
but it
ahead,
seems
it?
It I thought close. 15 and 19. Know. It was they were in the same.
Yeah, the Vols are definitely 19.
Yeah, and that was That was not a good
But I definitely did not have Trey Lipscomb pegged to hit 380 with like 22 home runs or whatever he had.
The Vols were 19, should have been 19 minus 18 is what they should have been. But hey, we live in Longview.
Maybe 19 minus 9. They didn't get to Omaha, did they?
Well, there you go. Ooh. There's that. So, gentlemen, good to be back on the airwaves with you. Hey, let's say thanks to our friends from S2 Cognition. The future of sports have arrived. S2 Cognition delivers a revolutionary approach to helping athletes understand how in-game decisions impact their performance from youth to pro. We have we've loved their support this entire year with these podcasts and live streams. So thanks to those guys.
Ruth, I'm just going to let you know that we're going to do an off-season cognitive test on you.
Ooh. That's another thing I might be skipping, if that's okay.
You're the Notre Dame grad.
Oh, boy. As my dad likes to say, Kendall, somebody has to finish last in the class. Even Notre Dame has a last in the class. So there you go. Happy to be that person.
Sandbagger. #sandbagger.
Sandbagger. That's right. Oh, gosh. Boys, great to see you. We'll jump on the airwaves next week. Everyone have a great week, and we will talk to you soon.